This is Vectis Radio, serving the Isle of Wight and beyond. www.vectisradio.com.
We have a studio full of people. We have Dame Shirley. And just get a little bit closer to that microphone there, Dame Shirley.
I'm here.
And we've also got Sammy in as well.
Hello.
And we've just been joined by, is it Mark?
Mark, that's correct. Langford.
Langford, that's easy enough to remember, isn't it?
Like Bonnie Langford.
Like Bonnie, any relation?
No relation, no, I'm afraid.
Relation. I thought that was a bit like us, actually.
Now, you've got an incredible story. This has been set up, and we've got to say thank you to Maggie Curry for setting this interview up. Yeah. And the reason why it's an incredible story is because you were on drugs and drink, you were addicted, and you're clean now for how long?
On the 1st of May, it'll be 4 years.
4 years, which is, I would imagine an incredible and a tough journey.
It's had its moments, it's been... I don't think it's a walk in a... It hasn't been a walk in a park. It's been sometimes been like a walk in a forest with a few fallen trees that I've had to sort of hurdle over.
Okay, and we're going to find out a little bit more about how and why and hopefully at the end of this, you know, if people are struggling, suffering and, want some help, even just knowing somebody else is there... been done it and come out the other side,
give people hope. I think that's the main, that there is, there is a life after addiction, really, that there can be a life.
Now off air we were talking about you were 13 when you started drinking,
around that sort of age, about 13,
which is fairly normal for a bloke, a nipper. I think we all sort of had a drink from nicked our dad's beer or had a drink of sorts. I'm sure none of us is any different.
No.
So when did it start becoming like, okay, now it's too much? What age?
I think it happened quite quickly. It was by the time I was 17, I was. I believe then, looking back now, I didn't know at the time, I believe I was fully sort of a full-blown addict, full-blown alcoholic. I was needing to drink and take other substances quite regular basis, and I was getting into trouble from 17 onwards because I needed to find money and find ways to feed my addiction. At the time, when I look back at it now, there was some, I could go, oh yeah, that was a good time. But then when I really think about it, it wasn't. Whether it was going out to a nightclub and dancing all night afterwards, I remember my thought process is I couldn't feel like this. So it was again getting to the place I was that night at that nightclub. And I was always, straight away, I was chasing that to stop feeling like I was feeling. So I was always chasing that high, really. And it didn't matter how I would get there. So and I found that mixing alcohol and drugs together, I could get to that place really quick.
Okay.
And not so much money because I was mixing them. I would be in, I suppose you could call it oblivion, but I was functioning... But I wasn't feeling what I was feeling, like this horrible feeling that was running through me, that there was like something missing in my life. And when I was intoxicated or high, or both mixed together, when I was on substances as a whole, I felt a part of something, I suppose. I felt a part of the people that were around me. I just felt a part of something. I didn't feel like anything was missing. There was... And I didn't have time to do soul searching to find out what was missing. That was too scary. That was too sort of like, well, I don't really want to go there yet. I don't know if I'm ever going to be ready to go there. At the time, at the time, it was just, I just don't want to feel like that. It was a horrible feeling not being intoxicated. It was a horrible feeling.
Where did you grow up? When all this was going on, where were you? Because you did mention South Africa.
I left to live with my dad in South Africa, and that was, I went out there on holidays from about 13, and then I was going out there, and then I went out there to live. I believe I was about, it's really hard to remember, I was around 15, I think I come back just before my 16th birthday, and I've actually been told by my family now I've reconnected them. I'll come back a different person. You know, I was I went there. I don't know what I was expecting. Maybe something I will think about in the future. But I went there. I went to school there, and drink alcohol was readily available. It was just the not the in thing to do. It was the acceptable thing to do. Everyone had done it, and all you were told is if you're going to have a drink, don't drink by yourself.
Yeah.
So, but all the friends, as soon as we left school, we'd go, we'd all hang around together, and we'd drink, and we'd play in the pool, play on the games machines, whatever it may be.
Would that have been different if you'd have been in Britain, or would it? You should think it would have panned out exactly the same.
Personally, I'd think it would have panned out the same.
Yeah,
I personally do. I've thought about that a lot since I've been in recovery, and I think it would have panned out the same. I think I just had this part in me that I always felt like something was missing. And I didn't want that part. It was a horrible feeling running through me all the time. It was I don't know. I know at the time I didn't know what it was, you know. So, and the only way I could stop feeling like that was alcohol or drugs.
Do you know what it was now? That, you know, do you know what to avoid? I mean, those feelings of that drove you to that.
Yeah.
Do you know what they are, and do you know how to avoid them? Or control them, I guess.
I think I've accepted it. I was just lonely. That was it. I felt lonely within myself, right. You know, and it brought on a lot of mental health challenges. You know, it was I was really isolated in my mind. I was, I didn't feel loved. I didn't feel wanted. I didn't feel like I belonged anywhere. You know, it was just, and it was something that with drink and drugs, I could, you know, at the time it was easy because as soon as I was doing them, I was fitting in with this lifestyle, which looking back on now, it's absolutely crazy, you know. But so yeah, now, you know, I know it's okay to feel lonely. You know, I don't feel lonely, but when I'm having one of my off days, I can be surrounded by love and still feel a bit lonely. But that is it's just something I've learned to accept, you know.
Do you know what, I think most people have all of these things in them,
yeah,
and some it triggers and some it pushes you to do things and so on and so forth, and I guess as we get older we are more able to deal with them,
yeah.
in a way that, I mean, I always say as well, if you want to know something about somebody, you walk a mile in their shoes and then you'll know what it's like.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Every one of us has got something that is going to cause or could cause, and I guess you were kind of unlucky. But in the same aspects, I mean, at least now you've got the rest of your life now, where you're pretty much sorted.
Yeah,
I would imagine every day is still a challenge, it is for most of us.
I do one day at a time. Every day is one day at a time. And I think what I'd like to say to anyone listening, and that happens to be my age or anyone that knows anyone of my age, is I do believe if I did ask for help somewhere along the beginning.
Yeah,
because I was afraid to because of the rejection. So, but if I did, you know, I want to give people hope. Just if you can find it in yourself to ask for help, there's so many people that will help.
Yeah,
you know. But when you're caught, when I was caught up in this, that's the last thing. I didn't want to do it because it's really hard. It's because you feel like that. So you go and ask for help. In your mind's telling you, you've got all these stories going on in your head saying they're just going to tell you to sod off, sort of thing. You know, they're going to say, you know, you go and sort your drink and drug problem out. They actually probably wouldn't. You know, that's just a story that we tell when you're especially when you're an addict. I think you just, me personally, I can't speak for anyone else. That's the story I was telling myself. These unhelpful stories were just going around in my head.
See, the way I look at life now, it's quite simple. Is it if you've got problems in your own head, you know that other people have too, and that's the way I look at it. And it makes me feel more comfortable, not better, but it makes me feel more comfortable that. And if people are listening, and they get something out of this. It's a case of they can register what you're going through.
Yeah,
you know, they're not alone.
No,
the thing is that you mentioned loneliness, and you now know that you're not alone.
No,
which I'm guessing is half the battle.
It's half the battle. Yeah, everyone's got a story, and everyone, you know, everyone, if they can, you know, or even if they don't, it's a family member, a friend that they hardly know, can share their story. and how much that will empower themselves to be able to start vocalising stuff, I think, is because myself, I kept so much bottled up that, and it was destroying me. All this stuff that, you know, is there's probably more to come out, you know, but it was all there. It was just, it was actually destroying me from within, you know. I've just kept it in, and that was the safest and best way. And over the past nearly four years, I've been talking, and I've realised actually this is actually healthy talk. Yeah. What I thought was really damaging to myself, it's not actually damaging myself. It's really actually quite rewarding to be able to talk and give hope to all ages, you know.
Well, let me tell you, the hope, Rob, this is going out live, yeah, and it's also going to be podcasted as well.
Oh, right.
So people will be able to download, they will be able to hear, and you will be helping.
Cool.
Which is great, because
yeah,
I think that's what it's all about.
Yeah, definitely.
How old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
43 this year, so I'm 42 at the moment.
Yeah. So you don't look too bad for someone that's had like a...
oh, you know, thank you. Again.
An unhealthy lifestyle, yeah, if you like. I mean, so when you were on the drugs, I mean, what sort of drugs are we... We're talking about the hard stuff.
We're talking, you know, it actually started off as... Well, quite hard straight away, really, you know, is people say that they started off on cannabis, then jumped onto this and this. I started off on amphetamines, really, and then ended up smoking cannabis, and then it was ecstasy and LSD, and it was it sort of, and then cocaine, and alcohol took a big come charging back into my life a lot more. Again, so alcohol, strong alcohol, and a lot of it, and on the Millennium night, so year 2000, I always remember I sat down, and it's the first time I tried heroin, and it was the first, and I thought, you know what, that's absolutely horrible stuff. It did not stop me to have a 10-year addiction. You know, even as much as I thought it was absolutely horrible stuff, it didn't stop me having a 10-year addiction. I thought I'd never be addicted to something like that.
Do you know what? When you say that, I've been questioning myself a lot in the last few years, and I've had this conversation with only one other person, my wife, because I sit there and she'll pour out a brandy and I'll taste it and I think, why do we really drink this? It's all right with a bit of coke. But she pours it out neat, and I'm thinking, I don't really like this. But you still drink it anyway.
Yeah.
And I think there's an addiction in all of us, and I think we're all addicted to certain things. And, and even coffee now, I question. I drink it, and I think, why are we drinking this? Is this because someone's like put something in your brain that you drink it? But the alcohol thing, I mean, the unfortunate thing is, you mentioned when you first had your first beer, you were 13, roughly the same for me as well. Yeah. And I'm guessing the first beer that a bloke has, a nipper has, will think, yeah, this is big, this is what my dad does, and this is what grown-ups do. And you probably aren't aware that it tastes horrible.
No.
But for some reason, we've got that thing in us that I'm addicted to that beer now, even though I don't like it. And you mentioned the heroin there, you think, oh, that's horrible, that's really horrible, but then you manage to do it for 10 years, and you think how simple it is. So I mean, you were just one of the unlucky ones, because that's in all of us, and the sad thing is, we should question it more. We should really question it. Why am I drinking this? This is horrible. It tastes like paint stripper and bleach, but we still do it, don't we?
And that's with anything, you know. I've cut out sugar as much as I can, even in my life now. You know, it's because I thought it was a healthy thing to do. You know, it's I suppose a few of us are programmed different. You know, there isn't no stopping point. And so I can remember sort of like the first sort of couple of times when I was out after school having drinks. And it would, a few people would be zipping their drinks, I suppose, and I wouldn't. I'd be drinking it like to an absolute extent. It was, I think it was something like Thunderbird at the time or something like that. It was cool.
I remember Thunderbird.
Yeah, and it was the blue and the red, and I think the red was a little bit stronger maybe, or around the other way. And I used to grab a bottle of that and near enough down it in one. It's not really normal behaviour. And if I knew then what I knew now as such, I'd say, well, actually, why didn't I just zip that, you know, have a glass gently? but I believe that I was actually sort of, maybe I was just wired a bit different, you know.
Well, I think it's in all of us. We all have that capability. So yeah. when you're on the hard stuff then, and there you are, you've done that for 10 years and you didn't like it. Well, yeah. There must come a time when you say, when was that point when you said to yourself, do you know what? I've got to get off this. What was that? What was? Do you remember that moment when you thought, right, okay, I need to do something?
I actually do, funny enough. And me and a friend, he's no longer with us. He was a good friend of mine. We just decided, like, one day, because we were both sort of living the, I wouldn't say the same life, but doing roughly the same things. We decided that, right, we don't want to take it anymore. So we didn't. We've just, it was probably, crikey, 2013, about 2012, that I just decided, don't want to take that anymore, and went to, we were already on this prescription stuff that they call methadone, so it was quite an easy decision. Yeah, it was relative, it was, because we had made it with each other, it was more solid, it was more sort of, that's, you know, it was more solid, we're going to do this, and that was really the start of a process of looking back on it now. I didn't realise it at the time, but definitely looking back on it now, that was the start of the process of me giving up, and giving up everything and coming and starting a new life in recovery.
Did you have, like, because I've known a couple of people that you know, there was one chap that was in our newsroom, and he was an alcoholic, and his. We all thought was his rock bottom, but then we thought, well, no, you've got probably a few more rock bottoms to go. Yeah, one of them was, he was reading the news, or he was just about to read the news, and he came in and he sat down on somebody, and then he got up because there was somebody there, and he sat down on somebody else, and it was almost like everyone was looking and thinking, what's going on here? Yeah. And then obviously we put two and two together. And then, you know, sadly, that wasn't... We all thought, that's his rock bottom. That's going to shake him up. That's going to make him want to change. And then there were many more after that. He got into, you know, quite a few serious issues. So I'm guessing you've gone through the same, where you've probably had rows with people, fallen out with people, and exasperated people because they just wanted you to get better.
I've had it, yeah, mostly my family. You know, a long time ago, I don't think, you know, it's somewhere that I won't discuss too much because I haven't really discussed with all of them yet. But I know that my addiction really hurt my mother. I know that, and really hurt my parents and my brother and my sister and the rest of my family.
But the good thing is, you probably know this already, but I pointed out anyway, you've come out the other side, and they should be so proud because you've gone through it.
I know they are. You know, I do know they are. I did fall out with people. I think that's sort of pass and part. I didn't fall out with many. I was trying to keep it sort of like, I tried to keep my morals about me as much as I could, you know.
Were you working all the time this is going on as well?
No. I worked for a short time in Winchester, in a little place over there, quite a big place, a landscaping firm. I went into a rehab in Otterbourne. It's a Langley House project, Langley House Trust project, and I went there, and it was a nice place, and I was just thought, right, that's it, I can start work, and that would be I'll be cured. And so I writ off to seven companies, because I've never done landscaping in my life, and I writ off to seven companies, and I got three replies, one saying, come down and see us in the summer. That was somewhere down, I think it was Bournemouth way. One saying no, and one saying, come up and see us now, sort of, and gave me an interview. And I ended up working there. I had 7 acres of nursery, so I worked there for a little while, and then they had a landscaping side. And so I thought I was cured, even though I was drinking every day. I'd come back to the island, and I was commuting from the island to Winchester every day for about 8 months or so. But I never, at that time, work. It didn't keep me clean. It wasn't the end of, I thought going to work would be the end of all my problems, but I hadn't faced any of my problems or any doubt it or looked at my addiction problems at all. So they just come up and I lost all of that. If you, you know, it's
how long was that before the, you know, you've done almost 4 years. What's the longest period of time you've gone without drink and drugs?
This is it.
How before was it, you know, a couple of weeks or a month?
A couple of months. I think the longest was about 12 months, and that's because I was in prison. So
right,
yeah. So
did it work? I mean, you know, you don't, obviously you have to be careful when you're in prison. Can you still get drugs?
You can. Yeah. However, I was very in my rigid set thinking. It was a health farm.
Right.
So I'd go there, I'd have my 3 meals a day, I'd go to the gym, and I'd want to get out. You've got these EDRs, earliest release dates, and these LDR, longest release dates, and all this stuff. And I wanted to get out as soon as I got, you know. And at the time, I don't think prisons were like they are now, where you've got lots of rehabilitation stuff going on, which, you know, is brilliant. So you just go there, you'd sort of get clean, you stay clean for a while, you come out and you'll start again.
Yeah.
And it would just be, you'd start from where you left off before you went in.
See, I think you'd be a perfect person to go back into those kind of systems and say, hey, look, this is what happened. I went inside and I came out and I just carried on.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, you are somebody that I would say, you've got to go back and you've got to advise these people. You've actually been through it, came out the other end, and what the system they've got in place doesn't work.
No,
it needs to work. Otherwise, all that happens is these people just go on the conveyor belt and they don't get off it.
Well, I'm hoping, actually. I was in Sports Direct the other day, and I bumped into someone from Hampshire Probation Service, and happened to be my probation officer many, many moons ago. And I was talking to her, and she said, I'd like to get you in to do some voluntary work of some kind, so maybe there I'll be able to do something like that again.
I've mentioned this before, you know, Tony Adams was had addictions and he got done for drink driving and so on and so forth. And he went back into schools and he was teaching kids the error of his ways and so on. That's the sort of things. I mean, you know, when you hear of these people and they're doing these kind of things, and then you ask them, what experience have you got, and they say none. You know, what a pointless exercise. You've actually gone, you've been at the darkest we can ever imagine. We can't imagine how dark it must have been for you. I can imagine, you know, in the next half an hour we may just find out. You know, there's so many questions I do want to ask you. Obviously, we've only got half an hour, so you might have to come back.
Oh, well, if I have to come back, I'm sure we can arrange another date.
How do you cope now with, I mean, we forever, my wife and I will walk around the town, and you don't realise just how many people are actually smoking funny fags.
Yeah.
And you walk by an awful lot of people and you think, wow, how do you cope? Because that is there, and it's like, you get a whiff of it, and you think, I don't know, I smell nice, but, you know, so how do you cope on a daily basis? Because this is something you take each day as it comes. This is there, is out there every day.
Well, I'm quite sort of quite privileged in that way, because I am an Isle from the Isle of Wight, and of course, being caught up in that life that I was in, everyone knew about it, you know, whether it was from drinking right seafront, whether it was running around drinking in the park in Newport, going in and out of hospital because of things going on with me. Everyone seemed to know. And so I really just walk up and down town. When I go to, I don't do that all day long, just walk up and down town, by the way, but when I'm in town, whatever town I am,
if you want to do that, then you do it.
And I just think, well, you know, if people can, I just hold this like story in my head, if people can see that I've actually turned my life around, then, and I'm giving that person hope, you know, because I know a lot of these people that are smoking or drinking and on the streets, and I speak to them. Sometimes I don't, and sometimes I do, you know. But I hope that they think, a lot of the time, the feedback I get from, oh, well done, you look really well, it's really nice to see that you're doing good, you know. And I hope that, well, that they can just pass it on, and it gives them hope that they can, even though they're trapped at that moment in their addiction, that actually there is a way out for them, you know. They can actually do it. And I think that's how I can walk downtown and not let things like that faze me, because I just I won't say it's big-headed, but I just think this is... I've got a chance to show these people that actually you can turn your life around.
So you're in a stronger, much stronger position.
Yeah.
In your mind.
In my head, yeah. And minds. I feel really strong.
Okay,
yeah.
So you, there you are. You're 43 years old. You look fit. You work out?
Yeah, I work out, yeah.
Are there any, you know, lasting effects? Because obviously, you know, underneath it, is there lasting effects that you're taking drugs for so long? Is there, you know, problems inside?
Well, there's no problems inside. One of the first things I done when I got clean is I went and had a total, a total check over.
Right.
Because I was in and out of hospital a lot with really bad pancreas and liver problems. And so there's no... lasting. It's amazing how the body can heal itself. The only thing that I've really been left with is bad circulation in both my legs, but especially my left leg. It swells up quite a lot, you know, and that is...
Is that something you can work on?
It's manageable. I take medications for it, so it's manageable, you know. Okay. It doesn't cause me... I still do. I can do what I need to do, you know.
Do you have to be careful what you take? Do you, you know, because if you're taking painkillers and you think, right, okay, I need another painkiller.
Funny you should bring up painkillers. I don't actually bother with them. I don't take them. And I, if I was in a lot of pain, I think as far as I'd go would be paracetamol. You know, I wouldn't take anything with, say, codeine. You know, we've got them on shelves, paracetamol with codeine in and things like that. I'll just take paracetamol. If that didn't get rid of it, then I'd take a visit to the doctors and chat with them just to keep myself safe with this, because I do believe in my recovery. So there's association thing, you know. I won't cook with something that's got red wine in, you know, even though it's going to cook off. You know, it's one of them packet things, it's going to cook off. It's just it keeps me safe knowing that that's the association with all that stuff was with the word alcohol, red wine in this or codeine in this, you know. I just think, well, actually I don't need any of that, you know.
How do you combat these things on a daily basis? Because you know what it's like when you go around somebody's house and they invite you around to dinner. And they say, do you want a drink? No, I'm driving. Oh, go on, one won't hurt you. Mm. How do you cope with
it? It all depends who it is, really. Some people, I just say, no, I can't drink. I don't like the person we've become. Other people, I say, I'm silly, I'm an alcoholic. You know, it really all depends who it is, really. You know, I try to be as transparent as I can without damaging anyone around me, if that makes sense.
Do you think, I know I was watching a programme, I forget the name of the programme, Bradley Walsh was a copper in it, and he used to carry this coin around. And people would know what the... I thought you were going to get your coin out. There ain't a charge, honestly. But he got this coin out, and it was almost like people knew that. Would you welcome something like that, where people not so much know all about you, but they know not to, you know, don't ask this man if he wants alcohol because you're putting pressure on him.
I think I'm pretty good at it. I think I'm pretty sort of good at it anyway. You know, is I can put myself into this.
It's part
into
of
this place.
The challenge,
you know,
as well.
I'm very mindful. I practice mindfulness quite a lot. You know, so I can walk into a situation. I just sort of investigate the situation I'm going to walk into, and possibly what I may be asked and how I will answer it and things like that. I don't, you know, is. Like, I wouldn't choose to go to a pub to have a meal. You know, I have done. I'm not, you know, but I wouldn't choose to, you know, sometimes.
Is that a challenge? Or is it now?
Because I can go in there and I'm going... Normally, if you're going... It's a mindset. I'm going in there for food. So it's a restaurant. Yeah. I'm not going in there. There might be a bar there, but I'm not going to the bar. I'm actually going to the food counter. So it's I'm actually going to the restaurant and having something to eat. I'm not going to a bar and having something to eat. It's just how I re-say it in my mind, you know. So it's all self-talk, really.
So, ego, almost 4 years... And, you know, I would imagine they're four of your best years.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And some of them have been quite hard, I would imagine.
Yeah, I've had some tough days. Not as many as I thought I could have ended up with. But yeah, there's been some tough days when it's I think especially around when I think about family and friends, you know, especially friends that are lost, that I've lost, that have because of their own addictions, you know, and I think, crikey.
How are they towards you now? How are they, you know, I would imagine there's, you know, especially family. I know you said you don't really want to talk about family too much, but that's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
But everything is like been, you know, the bridges have been built and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I'm still building bridges, you know, with family members. After all, you know, it can't be built sort of overnight, you know, is sometimes, you know, and I think when I was. Well, I was addicted to things. I was always rushing, you know, rushing around, getting this, doing this, doing this. And it was just, like, really fast. And in recovery, I could just slow down a bit and realise, actually, it doesn't have to be done tomorrow. It can, and some things, it, you know, and it always was an excuse. I want it done tomorrow. And if it wasn't done tomorrow, right, that's it, I can have a drink. I can have a drink, feel sorry for myself, can take some, because it didn't work out. However, in recovery, you can sort of slow down and you can think, actually, you know what, it can happen tomorrow, it can happen next year, it doesn't matter, as long as I keep building on myself and my recovery and my loved ones and keep building and getting stronger. You know, change behavior, I think, is the best apology, you know. And so I can just, and my behavior, and I just keep being me, you know, that's the biggest apology I can give, really.
Do you still have to meet with people? You sit around and you know we watch these TV programs and they say, oh, you know, we go in and we talk about our problems. Do you still do that on a regular basis?
I do, yeah. Sometimes I go to meetings, sometimes I feel the need to go and talk to people that and I will go there because I think I think part of recovery is actually sharing recovery with other people. You know,
do you hope that there will be a time when you've done your bit, you're fully recovered, and you can step away from that, so you can kind of, you know, it's what's normal anyway.
But
step away from it, so you don't need that anymore. You can now just get on with your life.
Well,
will there come a time?
I've been thinking a few things. I believe I have sort of, you know, I have recovered in recovery. I will still go to meetings and still go and speak to people with addiction problems because that is part of what keeps recovery alive, you know, as it's part of spreading recovery worldwide, you know, island wide, worldwide. To keep it, you've got to give it away. You know, I know their lyrics are from the Ian Brown album and a very good song, but to keep this, you've got to keep recovery. You have to go. You have to spread it around and give it to people and say, because it's free. It's free and it's hope.
It's helping you and it's helping them as well.
And it helps them to restores them a bit of hope, a bit of faith.
Hey, look, we're going to take a break.
Okay.
And we're going to come back, we're going to chat some more.
Yeah.
And we're going to go into them dark days.
All right.
Is that all right?
Yeah, that's all right.
Okay, so join us for part two when we come back and we'll be finding out about them dark days, which sounds like there's been a few.
There's been a few.
That's a song as well, there's been a few.
www.vectisradio.com.
With some news on their exciting developments on their Dodner Industrial Estate depot, here's Andy Gustar from Hamilton's Fine Foods.
We have about 7 or 8 parking spaces available. We have all the fruit and veg, all the fresh cakes and bread we were selling before, plus the full range of Hamilton's fresh meats. So that's really available now at Dodner as well. So not only Power Street in Newport, Dodner to park as well. And we do a click and collect service online, a full up and running website now online, and a delivery service as well.
www.hamiltonsbutchers.com or hamiltonsfinefoods.com. Find us there and also find us on Facebook, or our main phone number is 526098.
The White Military and Heritage Museum. Situated on the main Cowes to Newport Road, the museum will excite your senses. Adults and children of all ages can experience the surge of adrenaline on an armoured vehicle ride around the tank track. For a real treat, why not try a ride in one of the Centurion tanks? There's also a covered rifle range to test your shooting skills. Enjoy refreshments in the cafe or the mess bar. Come along to the White Military and Heritage Museum, where you will be welcomed with open arms by our volunteer team. All profits are redistributed among armed service charities. Call 01983 300037 for more details or to book your ride.
For over 70 years, White Building Materials have been the leading supplier of construction and building materials on the Isle of Wight, offering ready-mix concrete, decorative aggregates, concrete blocks, and so much more. They're right here on your doorstep, unless, of course, you haven't built it yet, in which case you need White Building Materials. For more information, or if you have any questions regarding products and services, contact them on 01983 524 822 or check out the website whitebuildingmaterials.com. White Building Materials. Call them today.
Isle of Wight Food Bank provides emergency food and support to local people in crisis. Your support helps stop local people going hungry. For more information, ring the office on 01983 292 040 or check out isleofwightfoodbank.org.uk/.
With some news on their exciting developments on their Dodner Industrial Estate depot, here's Andy Gustar from Hamilton's Fine Foods.
We have about 7 or 8 parking spaces available. We have all the fruit and veg, all the fresh cakes and bread we were selling before, plus the full range of Hamilton's fresh meats. So that's really available now at Dodner as well. So not only Power Street in Newport, Dodner to park as well. And we do a click and collect service online, a full up and running website now online, and a delivery service as well.
www.hamiltonsbutchers.com or hamiltonsfinefeeds.com. Find us there and also find us on Facebook, or our main phone number is 526098.
Hello, I am Android. I want to tell you about the Vectus iPlayer. Go to the Vectus Radio homepage. Do it now, I am waiting. Still waiting, still waiting, still waiting, still waiting. Scroll down around 6 inches, click the purple icon. There are an array of shows for you to listen on catch up, including Chip's Dance Hall Show, He's a Cheeky Chappy, The Rock Monster Show, and The Friday Rock Show, all available for free on the Vectus iPlayer. You can also listen live. One day androids will rule the earth.
Stay social and get in touch. Give us a call on 01983 240 666, or add us on Skype. It's Vectus.radio. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
Here we are back with part two then. We have special guests. We have Dame Shirley in. We also have Sam in as well. And we've got Mark Lang. Langford.
Yeah, that's right.
As in
Mark
Bonnie.
Langford. Yeah, as in Bonnie. Yeah.
Now, right. Shirley's been talking to you during the commercial break, yeah. And you got a question, Shirl.
I'm just wondering, Mark, was there a trigger that sort of started this off? Or I can relate to that. Somebody in my family this happened to.
Yeah, yeah.
Because their mum and dad separated, and that's when it started the problems.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. But there's usually something that triggers it off, isn't there? Or is it because you're going out with your mates and your mates are all doing this, so you'll do it?
I think it's part of both. Yeah. I think it's part of both, because my parents, they separated, but that was, you know, I think I was about six or seven,
yeah,
you know.
That's right.
And so I can't really say that it was later on,
yeah,
you know, that I started going out and drinking with friends.
Were your friends then, all of them, were they drinking and taking drugs? That was your main friends, was it?
Drinking, yes. Yeah, and I soon, yeah, yeah.
You still go out together.
Yeah. And a few of them, sadly, are no longer with us anymore.
Because of the drink and drugs, yeah.
Yeah. And a few of them are still alive, and they're still drinking and taking drugs.
Do you still associate with them, or do you not?
No,
you
I
don't.
Choose not to. No,
that's...
I wouldn't be rude if I saw them in...
No,
because
you know what they're going through.
I might be able to give them some hope, you know.
Yes.
Actually, but I wouldn't...
Yeah.
I don't choose to approach me. If they want to approach me, I feel that I'm approachable.
But you know what they're going through, because you know, nobody approached you, did they?
No,
to say,
no.
Do you want any help?
You had
to do it yourself,
yeah,
didn't you,
yeah,
sort of thing?
Yeah, in the end, it was me that sort of...
And did you actually go into a rehab centre?
I went to a place called Butler Gardens in Shanklin.
Right.
And I went there. I was... actually quite. I'd been in the hospital in 7 acres, and so I'd been off the alcohol for a while, and then I got out of there, and I thought I was cured, and started drinking strong lager near enough straight away, and really got really bad within a few hours. Went to straight into some very dark
places.
Was it
because you got back in with your old friends again, or
no? Because as soon as I left the hospital,
just
I thought
yourself,
I was cured, and
you wanted to.
It was the addiction then. Really, yeah. You know, it was definitely. It was. I can actually remember it, and it was just like, get 4 cans, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's what my head was telling me. Because you're cured now. You know, and yeah. I wasn't. You know,
no.
I wasn't cured.
So how long did you go into rehab for? Was it about a month? Or?
Well, I went into like it was a bed. They had a bed there for mental health patients, and so I was there for 3 weeks. They managed to keep me there for a little bit longer, and then the Real World Trust, who run Butler Gardens, actually did said that actually I could move in as an actual tenant there, and so I moved in, and then I started doing the process, a lot of work on myself.
It all sort of started from then.
About the 1st of May,
that's
the
brilliant.
1st of May 2013.
So that place there is
saved
wonderful
my life.
Then.
Helped. They helped me save my life. Yeah,
that's
and
fantastic to know
there.
We've got somewhere on the island where they can go.
I couldn't thank them. I'll hopefully do some work with them soon in the future.
No, that's
great. I can't thank them enough. They're amazing people.
You should be very proud of yourself.
Thank you very much.
It's fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So now you're clean and you have been for a while. You mentioned earlier on that you couldn't see because you were too close to it or in your, you know, probably your problems. Are you now like working it all out? Are you now like got to? Because we do this in life. When we get older, this is what happens.
Yeah.
We sort of think, oh crikey, I did that, and you didn't realise it at the time, and you think so. Are you going through that state at the moment? Because we all do it.
I think the state I'm going through at the moment is actually not forgetting that happens, learning from everything, and starting to build a life up for me and my family. You know, like the normal things. You know, I want to sort of like think about, you know, a mortgage and think about things like that.
And why shouldn't you?
You know, and really think about employment. You know, I've recently been at a job interview and things like that. You know, it's in the supporting role to try to support and care for people that with their own problems, really, you know, for whether it's mental health, addictions, you know.
I want to ask you about mental health.
Yeah.
All right, because I have this thing, and I have a real bee in my bonnet about what they call it.
Mm.
Because, just say, for instance, if it wasn't called mental health, it was called mind health, it might not put so many people off trying to get help.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I try to change. I don't know. I'm surprised I actually haven't done it today. I tried most of the time. Try to just say mental health problem, not problems, challenges.
Yeah.
You know, because people are just challenges. Yeah. You know, I've seen so many great stories from just here, but just out of Key House here. You know, I've seen some really empowering and people that have gone through really, really something really big in their head, you know, and they've come out the other side and they're inspiring others. It's really good.
But if they were just change the label, and I know it's only a label, but at the same time it puts people off because they don't want to think of themselves as mental. Let's be honest, I don't look at you as being mental.
No. Well, I wrote a CV yesterday and I've just put health issues.
Yeah.
Why can't it just be called health issues?
That's
because
good.
You know,
mind health.
Mind health.
To me, it just puts people off trying to get help, and there would probably be a lot more people that would think, do you know what? I am going to go and see somebody about my mind.
Yeah.
You know, and because you're telling yourself, or it says on the label, there. Well, hang on a minute. They say I'm mental. Well, I don't think I'm mental, but I don't really want to talk about it now because it's put me off.
Yeah, it's a good point. That it's because a lot of people walk. Yeah. They're not everyone that's got challenges of walking around with walking sticks or in a wheelchair or limps. You know, they actually it's all up there. You know, and it is about, like you were talking about in the break, it's about talking, you know.
I really do. I believe in that. I think if you can talk and talk and talk, it's like when you get depression and that. I think talking, you know, cures a lot of things like that. the more you can talk about it.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned, you know, key word, loneliness.
Yeah.
You know, I would imagine if you weren't so lonely back then, for whatever reason, it might not have happened. But, hey, look, you come out the other side and you're a better person and you've got the rest of your life to look forward to.
Yeah,
but
sure.
You must have had some dark times. Do you want to talk about your darkest moments?
I can talk about a few of my darkest moments.
Bearing in mind it's lunchtime.
Yeah, I won't go into too much detail. Well, it's... Darkest times, really, it was when I was... I'd kicked the heroin, and I was like, really, really proud. I was still drinking really strong. For that 10 years, was just one big dark place anyway. I was doing something that I really didn't like about myself. So all the stuff that I'd been blocking out about myself, now I was doing something, and it was making me not like myself even more. And so it was like 10 years of just this big, dark place, and it was, you know, but there was always alcohol, and every now and then the alcohol would actually override the heroin in this, and I'd have this moment of, I wouldn't say bliss, but just didn't care, and a lot of times that would end up in trouble. But it was like, once I gave up the heroin, I thought, wow, this is great, a new life. But the alcohol then really started taking its toll, and I was waking up drinking really strong alcohol, beer or spirits first thing in the morning, and it wasn't long before my body basically started shutting down, and I was found myself just in and out of hospital. You know, I can't thank the NHS enough. You know, they were just immense. They really helped me out. They were brilliant. They were, you know, I was going in there really bad pancreatitis, so much pain. I really wouldn't wish it on anyone. It's really, really horrendous. And all I'd be thinking about is, oh, come on, pain goes. Oh, I can get a drink. They've given me a drug called Librium so I wouldn't shake or have fits. And I've got drips coming out of me. I've got bags attached to me. And all I could think about was alcohol. You know, I couldn't think of anything else. It was just totally overpowering. I'd ask people to come up and bring me alcohol. You know, that's how much it got hold of me.
Did they not, when you sort of went up to the hospital, did they not try and help you and put you onto somebody that you could talk to? Or did they just treat you and you had to go out?
I think they helped me absolutely as much
as they could.
I did have workers from Iris come up and see me as well, you know.
Yes, yeah.
They come up and saw me, so I had support there. But every time, I suppose because I became this regular, they knew what to do with me. They would give me Librium so I wouldn't be shaking and things like that, you know. And then they'd contact Iris. Iris would come up, and it was just all a big blur. It was how, and it was really was how, and because I'm sat in a hospital sober, I was dealing with everything else that was going on in my head, which normally the alcohol would
take it away,
and I didn't have that there, and so it was. It was like some sort of movie, like a horror movie, really. You know, you're stuck in a hospital and just wondering what the heck's going on, what you're doing. And you can't even think rationally, and you're hallucinating, and you're thinking all sorts of weird, horrible, really dark, really dark times.
We can't imagine what that must have, you know. We can only sort of, you know, if we watch programmes and watch people go through all these things. Would you ever think about writing a book or something, just to sort of so people know and, you know, get something out of this? I mean, the positive is something good is going to come of this.
Yeah,
it's coming out of it now. I mean, you've started your life again and you are going to be there for other people to look at and think, do you know what, you can help me, you can inspire me, and they probably inspire you by getting, and everyone's a winner. So do you think a book is in there? You know, just I wouldn't mind to
write a book one day or so, you know,
with the right
support. I'm not very good with putting words together, so if there's anyone out there that wants to help me put words together,
you've done really well. I mean, crikey, I should be taking notes for you.
You've been all right so far. You've done all right so far for an hour.
Thank you.
I mean, you know, you didn't sound like I thought you were going to sound.
Right.
You know, you sound very eloquent, you sound very honest, and I think, you know, inspirational.
Well, so thank you very much, Ian.
Coming out the other side and going through what you've gone through. And what is kind of scary is, and I'm guessing you still don't know what caused it in the first place. Does that bother you?
No.
Because it's like, just saying, for instance, if I get something really simple like a migraine or a migraine, whatever they call them, you know, you think, what's caused that? Because I don't want this anymore.
I'd put it down to, when if I think about it too much, I just put it down on, I've got an allergic reaction to alcohol. You know, that's what I say.
Addiction.
I'm allergic to it. Well, you know, I know that if I have a drink or take a drug, that it's the effect it will have on me. Totally a different effect that it will have on the person sat next to me.
I know. If I had a cigarette now, I wouldn't stop. I'd start again.
Yeah.
You know, it's an addiction, isn't
don't
it?
Don't do it.
It's just
don't do it, Shirley. If ever you get to that point.
I could easily.
Yeah.
When I see somebody with one, I could easily, and I know it would start me off again.
Well, I've given up smoking recently, I think nearly 2 years.
Yeah, it's hard.
And I still sometimes, you know...
If you see somebody with a cigarette.
It's not so much, it's the smell. I used to smoke roll-ups, and it's actually a cigarette. If someone walks past me, I think, I could do with one of them. I won't have one.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's my thought process. I just think it's an unhealthy story that my mind's telling me.
Yes. Hey, look, we're running out of time. We've got about a minute left. Is there a website or anything we can find out any details? If you've got advice for people, who do they go and see? What's the first port of call?
The first port of call would be... I'd have to say Iris. Doctor or look on Nature Therapy CIC. They've got a great Facebook page. Investigate. There's a good charity called Seeds for Change. Get on Google, you know, if you can. If you can't, first port of call. Iris, I would say.
Is Iris? I've got an ex-mother-in-law called Iris, and you don't fund her.
I can't think what it stands for at the moment.
IRIS.
Island Integrated Drug and Alcohol Services, or something like
that. So,
on Iris,
Iris.
And they will put you, I believe there's support groups there, and there's professional people.
Yeah. Okay. It's a privilege to talk to you.
Thank you
for coming in.
It's been an
eye-opener, and I'm hoping that, you know, it's good for you, it's good for everybody else, because they'll be listening to this, and those people that do have problems, and those people that have kids that have problems, and so on and so forth, you know, that there is light at the end of the tunnel, and you've just shone that light. Yeah. So thank you for coming in.
Well, I hope it's given people hope, and, you know, that there is a life after addiction, you know, definitely.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you,
Dame Shirley.
Thank you, Ian. Thank you, Mark.
And thank you, Sam.
Thank you
coming back next week?
Yeah, if you love me.
Yeah, come back next week. We'll do it all again next week.